This fall, choose Primavera Online, and you'll be choosing a school with flexibility, personalized support, and an award-winning curriculum that's over 20 years strong. Now enrolling grades K to 12 at ChoosePrimavera.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
At B. Topmeyer, currently en route to go and cover Oklahoma and Michigan. We'll talk about that in just a minute, but who do you think had the best week last week?
Well, Florida State's the obvious one, right? But I think LSU.
It feels like Kelly's kind of feeling himself right now.
Oh, absolutely, and he has been all preseason.
That's
too.
Fair.
I think some people just tuned into the comments after the win and saw him dunk on Dabo a little bit. But this has been going on for a few months now. I mean, he was peacocking his way throughout the preseason, and I think he thought he had a good team, and it looked the part. So, yeah, big win for LSU, big win for Florida State. Those are the two that stand out most.
Did you think any differently of Miami after what we saw?
Well, I was pretty high on Miami coming into it, so I think it solidified those thoughts. But yeah, seeing Carson Beck play the way he did, like, I know the easy take was, oh, Carson Beck wasn't the problem at Georgia last year, and I agree with that, but that's also a little bit revisionist history and acts like he had, you know, he played well. He didn't. He regressed last year, and he didn't have a ton of help. But this looked like, you know, more 2023 Carson Beck. And I don't know if that was just, change of scenery or the confidence of actually having good receivers.
And better offensive line play, too.
Yeah, better offensive line for sure. But Miami looked dangerous. And the big thing for me wasn't just Carson Beck. It was how well the defense played. I mean, I know Notre Dame got up to 24 points, but I thought for most of the game, Miami's defense was pretty disruptive, and it really looked like it maybe had the potential to be their best defense in several years. So, yeah, Miami looked good. LSU looked good. Florida State looked good. Auburn was another one. I mean, I don't know how good Baylor's going to end up being. I mean, you know, the Big 12, it's like take your pick of who's going to win that conference. But I thought that was, a bit of a calming victory after a worrying preseason, I think, for Auburn with not really doing much on the recruiting trail and all the concerns around Hugh Freeze. I thought that brought a little sense of calm to Auburn.
Who had a worse week, Bill Belichick or Kalen DeBoer?
Oh, my goodness. That's a tough pick there. But I think maybe Kalen DeBoer, just because, I mean, Belichick's opener was awful. Couldn't have gone any worse. But I think there was a world in which some of us could envision this. I didn't think it was going to be this bad, but like if you told me either North Carolina was going to get trounced or Alabama would lose by two scores and just get flatly whooped, I think I would have told you North Carolina getting trounced was more likely. I was a little bit cautious about Bama, and I thought Florida State was actually poised to rebound, but still, it wasn't just that Alabama lost. You know, if this would have been a close down to the wire game, it still would have been a bad loss, but it wouldn't have been the sky is falling around Kalen DeBoer. But this was just a four quarter whipping, and it really followed the theme of what we saw from last season. You know, I mean, Alabama got physically manhandled in their losses to Tennessee last year, Oklahoma especially. And frankly, Vanderbilt, too. Like, this was the continuation of a theme, really, which is why I think the feelings are what they are in Tuscaloosa.
No, I think you make a very good point. It's not the fact that they lost. It's the fact that all these losses all kind of look the same.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, the narrative around Alabama in the preseason was Ty Simpson doesn't have to be a superstar, that he's going to have enough of a supporting cast that he can be like this throwback Bama quarterback and be like this elevated game manager, and Alabama's going to be fine. Well, that didn't look like the case at all. I mean, it looked like his supporting cast is going to be an anchor and not an attribute, and so Alabama's going to need their quarterback to be a superstar if his supporting cast plays the way it did in week one, and I don't think he is. I think he can be that elevated game manager, but he needs a really good supporting cast.
No, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because obviously I think there are going to be a lot of people that were going to say, like, well, Simpson's not good enough. I agree with you. What I thought was actually the troubling aspect of it is the reason why I was bullish on Alabama is I bought into, honestly, people that I trust that told me, hey, man, they're better everywhere else, and they just need him to be good enough. And honestly, like, I thought at one point, man, on the offensive side of the ball, it felt like he was the only guy that was trying.
Hello, Toby.
Totally agree. He was what I thought he needed to be this season. He wasn't awesome. He wasn't Joe Burrow. He wasn't Bryce Young. But I didn't think he was going to be either. He was the one guy that played about to the level that I would have expected him to play, especially given that this was his first career start. It was on the road. It was against an opponent, never mind last year's record, because that's irrelevant in, you know, today's college football, where you just buy a new team every offseason. So against what I thought was a pretty good opponent on the road, I thought he was the one guy that maybe played up to what my expectation was for him. And I was like you. Like, I had bought in to enough of what I had heard, you know, just not just from pundits, but from people that I
know that cover the team, and they're not, right, you know, they're not also card game members of the Red Elephant Club.
Hey, exactly. I really think this came as a shock. You know, this was not, oh yeah, this has been brewing since March. No, this was a shock to people around that program that have seen it up close. They thought Alabama was going to be a little bit closer to maybe a couple years ago Alabama, not peak of the Nick Saban dynasty, but playoff caliber team, playoff caliber supporting cast, going to be pretty good to really good on the offensive line. That was the expectation, and they looked really bad on the offensive line, and not really any better on the other side of the ball either. You know, the biggest concern I'd heard in Alabama circles in the preseason and really all offseason was a concern about a lack of pass rushers. Okay, well, that certainly showed up, although Florida State didn't need to throw the ball much. But that was sort of the ringing concern. There was not this concern about how the offensive line was going to get overpowered, and how the defensive line, you know, maybe they didn't have pass rushers, but they thought they'd hold their own in the line of scrimmage. That didn't happen. I mean, it was just highly, highly concerning, and this is just happening at the absolute worst time for Alabama, because it's not, I mean, you can't fire the guy right now, but that's what I think your average Alabama fan wants, right? You want to, if you're not an Alabama fan right now, you want to believe he's on the hot seat, and maybe he'll get to that point, but I don't think he's there yet, and that just leaves Alabama in a tough spot.
Well, then you can also wind up in this spiral if this season goes. I mean, again, they still have 11 games to play, and they, you know, this could be, we look back and, hey, Florida State was an 11-1, or, you know, they're the best team in the ACC, and they're a playoff team. Like, that's entirely possible. And you look back and you go, man, it was a tough spot on the road. You had some weather, like all this. But I think the biggest problem that I had is I keep struggling with this thought. Are they that talented? Like, that's kind of what I know there's this internal debate amongst Bama people. You have AJ McCarron on my boss's old show, or my old boss's show, talking about they don't have the money that everybody else does. And then I talk to other people that I trust that go, look, man, that roster is got elite high school players. It's got transfers. Like, it has all the makings. And, like, to me, like, that's kind of the big question, because if the roster is good, then I think it is a coaching problem. if the roster really isn't that good, or maybe it's a little overhyped, maybe it's a paper good roster, but it's not the roster that Ohio State would put together, well, then it becomes more of an Alabama structural issue. And I feel like that's kind of the debate that I'm having in my head.
Yeah, and I don't think it's like an A-plus list roster, but to me, it's not a roster that should be getting trounced by multiple touchdowns to a team that, yeah, I think Florida State will probably be a top 25 team when all is said and done, but I don't think Florida State's winning the national championship. So I do think it's somewhere in between. This is a pretty good roster. This is a roster I think you could expect to make a run at the playoff with. I don't think it's the best roster in the country, but what's interesting is when Kalen DeBoer was hired there, like the number one concern about him was, is he going to be able to recruit in the South?
Yep.
And what's interesting is the only thing he's done well is recruit in the South. Like his recruiting classes have maybe not been Nick Saban level good, but that was already going to be a bigger struggle, you know, in this new world order.
I mean, anyway. The truth is Saban's last few classes weren't quote unquote Saban good.
That's right. And so like given that, his recruiting has been pretty darn good. And so it's like the one thing you felt good about the guy about, the X's and O's and the actual coaching element of it, that's what's been the issue. And so it's just like it's a total 180 of the concerns that people may have had about Kalen DeBoer coming in. It's just like, I mean, I don't think the guy all of a sudden overnight just forgot to coach. But for whatever reason, I don't think he's getting the most out of this team that he otherwise could get, because I guess what I'm saying is I think this is a roster that's good enough to look better than what they looked on Saturday. I don't think it's one of all Alabama's all-time greatest rosters, but they can be better than what they looked Saturday, and he's just not able to get it out of them, and I don't really know why.
We're talking to Blake Topmeyer, senior national columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. It was like an all-time good day for the University of Tennessee. Terms of like not only your team looked pretty good, and again, I don't know. I think I have more concerns about Syracuse than I did. Yeah. Like, feel good about Tennessee. But again, they had a good performance. Aguilar looked to be functional, competent, and he honestly showed a little bit more wiggle than I feel like I saw when he was at App. But in terms of how you feel about this team, did anything change on Saturday?
It did, and part of it was because of Tennessee. They played well, and I agree with you. I don't think Syracuse is very good, but yeah. Tennessee looked a little better on offense than I would have expected, given the late quarterback change. They look like they might be better at wide receiver than they were last year. Again, we're in danger of the week one knee-jerk here against a mediocre opponent, but I did think on offense they kind of exceeded the bar. But the other element of it is, too, if Alabama is this gettable, now, I know it's on the road, and Kalen DeBoer, for all the struggles last season, they held serve at home. They didn't lose at home. But that is factoring into my evaluation of Tennessee, too, is all of a sudden, if Alabama looks a little bit more gettable, you know, that opens up a bit more of a path to the playoff. Because, I mean, let's face it, the floor for Tennessee has to be 8-4. They can't be any worse than that. Now, they've beaten Syracuse. The other three non-conference games are slam dunks. They play the four worst teams in the SEC, or at least on paper. So the floor is 8-4. And it's just about, can you split with Georgia and Oklahoma at home and Florida and Alabama on the road? And coming into the season, I thought, they're not going to split those four. They're going to go maybe 1-3 in those four, and 9-3 is probably about where they land. But now, you know, ever so slightly, I'm starting to reevaluate that, and maybe they don't get Bama. But as I just look at those four games through the lens of what we saw in week one, I think they could go 2-2 in those four, and I just don't see them losing to any of the other four. I know they lost to Arkansas last year, but they get them at home this year.
Yeah.
I don't see them losing to those other four. And so if you can go 2-2 in the four biggies, you got a 10-2 playoff team on your hands. And I don't know that Tennessee will actually be playoff caliber, but we know the committee is not going to turn down a 10-2 team from the SEC. And so if they can get to that spot, if they can split those four, which, you know, I don't feel like great about that, but I feel a little bit better about that possibility than I probably did going into week one.
I find it hard to believe, and I know they're sustaining injuries on the defensive side of the ball. I just feel like, man, that defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. Because the other thing I was thinking about on Saturday, and again, maybe Syracuse is that slow, but God, did they look fast and physical on defense.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I thought the defense would keep them in games, and I had a lot of concerns about the quarterback situation. I know Heupel's got a proven reputation there, the whole bit, but it wasn't like they were dynamite on offense last season. I thought, you know, you're adding this quarterback change in the mix. What's this going to look like? And, you know, we said it several times now, but it bears repeating, Syracuse is not good. However, I did think that it was reassuring some of the things Tennessee showed on that side of the ball, because I agree with you. I think the Tennessee defense is in pretty good shape to keep them in a lot of games.
All right, you were in Columbus. Was it as bad for Arch in person as it looked on television?
It was worse. I mean, he looked so jittery, which is what I didn't necessarily expect that. I mean, I know this is his first career road start, first start against a ranked opponent, but this is a guy that's, I mean, he's been groomed for this moment. And also, he's a 21-year-old. He's not an 18-year-old. Yeah. You know, he's in year three in the program. I was surprised he played that jittery, looked that jittery. And, you know, it was interesting to see sort of the commentary around it. The initial thought is like burying this guy and making fun of him after all the hype in the preseason. And then, like Sunday, Monday, I thought there was almost an overcorrection of like analysts trying to like prop him up and make it seem like he actually did play well. And it's like, no, he didn't. He didn't play well. But also, I don't know that this means the guy's entire career is going to be a bust. It could just be that against a really good opponent, a really good defense, and I think that Ohio State defense is really, really good, that he was jittery, he wasn't comfortable, and I also don't think his head coach, who has a reputation, Steve Sarkisian, for being this great play caller, I didn't think Sarkisian did enough to help a jittery quarterback, and Sarkisian admitted as much afterwards. He said he should have run Arch Manning more, called his number in the run game more in the first half, and that's one of the things that Arch does well, and where his arm was betraying him a little bit early, you know, if you would have let him get involved in the run game, maybe take a couple shots, maybe he thinks, okay, I'm in this, I can do this thing, and he settles down on all fronts. And so I do think, you know, there's some reevaluation going on there at Texas of, you know, you hate to risk injury, but that's one of the things the guy does well. He runs it, and they didn't really call his number at all in the first half. So I thought he settled in a little bit at the end. It's also Ohio State nursing a 2-touchdown lead. Yep. So I don't put a whole bunch of stock in that either. Overall, I think there's cause to be concerned about Arch, but you know, I'm not ready to write off the guy's career entirely yet.
No, I'm with you. When I can count the number of good throws that you made during the course of an entire game, that's tough. And it wasn't just like Blake, I mean, the first pass of the game, he has the guy that honestly was probably the most open receiver he had the entire day, and the throw was like 5 yards short. It wasn't even like, oh, he underthrew it and the guy had to like come back and instead of gaining 30, they gained 10. It was like, no, it was like a one hopper. And I was like, Right. Oh, that's weird, because I've watched a lot of film of this guy and I was like, I haven't seen that kind of throw. But to your point, it's like I think Ohio State, like last year, who played well against that defense? I guess Gabriel in the first game, kind of.
Right.
Is that it?
Right.
Like, I'm trying to think. Like, I guess you could say Leonard did late, but that almost, like, with all due respect, that almost felt fluky, because it was like Ohio State was dominating the game, and then Notre Dame basically just decides, like, hey, we got to try to throw our way back into this, and they were running a game plan that I imagine Ohio State was not very prepared for. And, I mean, credit to him. He made throws, but it's not like he just was good the whole game. But, man, some of the misses were so bad that, like, I was wondering, he kept, like, rotating his shoulder. And granted, as a former bad quarterback, anytime you start missing, you do that move. Like, that's a move I'm familiar with. But, like, I was sitting there wondering, like, has he got an injury, man? Because, like, this is not just, like, oh, man, he's having a tough day. This is, like, awful.
Yeah, it's like the golfer when he shanks one out of the woods. You look up into the sky, whip your head around as if some crow up there caused the problem. Yeah,
or the tiger, you start yelling at the photographers. You know,
like, that's right.
Really, guys, in my backswing.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I didn't think he had a ton of open targets to throw to, but when he did, he missed them. You know, it was everything that could go wrong in the pass game pretty well did. His receivers didn't get open enough, didn't get enough separation, but when they did, he didn't hit them. I thought the interception was really bad. He looked very timid on that throw. He floated it. I mean, especially up high from the press box, you could just see that coming from a mile away.
On TV, you could tell because they hadn't done anything. It's like Sark calls that play up, and he was throwing the deep one no matter what. And then you're right, like right when it left his hand, you just like got the shotguns out. You're like, we got a duck here.
Oh yeah, yeah. He didn't trust it, and frankly, should have been picked off a second time. Nearly was there in the second half, and so. You know, the stat line, that second interception would have stood, would have been even worse. I mean, he threw a couple beauties at the end, you know, throw to the sideline, a throw on, I think it was a wheel route.
The wheel route to the tight end was a really good throw. Honestly, he's not going to get credit for it. I actually thought the best throw he made was the fourth down throw to the corner where it should have been caught for a touchdown. I guess Browningstone didn't come down with it. Like, the irony to me was, I thought the better throw was the one Browningstone didn't make, and then Browningstone made the touchdown grab. I didn't think that was really that good of a throw, but, like, Browningstone kind of positioned his body pretty well.
Yeah, and the troubling thing is, we can count
Yeah, that's
more
the problem.
Bad throws.
Exactly. Like, that was what I was saying, like, on Monday. It's like, guys, if I can count how many throws you made that were good, that's not good.
Right. And I know now it's like thinking, oh, well, you know, this is how he looked against Georgia. But, you know, that was a limited sample size, too. So I guess the bottom line is I don't know what the real Arch Manning is yet, you know, because he looked fine against two substandard opponents last year. He looked like a fun little wrinkle as sort of the running threat in special packages last year. And then he looked pretty darn bad against a great opponent. So I don't want to overjudge that either. I guess I'm still waiting to see what is the real Arch Manning. I mean, I still think the guy's got a lot of talent, but as bad as it looked Saturday, it does make you rework, I guess, what you think might be possible for him and this team, a little bit at least.
All right, last thing before we get into the big game that you're going to be covering. The other thing I was thinking about last Saturday, or really all last weekend, have we jumped the shark on not taking field goals? Like, I understand math. I understand probability. That's also played on paper. Football's not played entirely. Like, I'm not saying you should ever ignore analytics. I'm not saying you should ignore game script. And I get that Ohio State may have played differently. But Sark had an opportunity to take two field goals. And how differently do you feel if Arch gets the football back and they just need a field goal down at the end?
Right. And no, I completely agree with you.
The Bama game, the same thing.
If we ever branch off and start our own podcast, we need to come up with some pithy name that basically says, take the 3 points. Maybe that's just the name of the pod right there. Take the 3 points. Like, I'm totally with you. Like, this is just, you know, we throw the word epidemic around a lot in our society these days. This has become an epidemic in the coaching industry. These guys not just refusing to take the 3 points. And I think they get bamboozled by these math nerds. That give them some spreadsheet and it's like, go for it. And it's like, I don't know if I trust all the science behind that. I don't know if I trust it in particular game moments. I mean, you can crunch all the numbers and run all these simulations and say, you know, 52% of the time you'd be better for going for fourth down here, but isn't the sign of a good coach, you know, kind of knowing in the moment, like, to heck with the 52% versus 48%. This is a time where we need to embrace the 48% strategy, you know? And that's what these formulas are, right? I mean, it's like playing a hand of blackjack, you know, hitting versus standing on 16. You know, sometimes you're painted into a corner and you got to make the best of the situation. Darned if you do, darned if you don't. And I think that's the thing here. They go too much on what the numbers say versus use some intuition here and think, you know, in this situation, I'm taking the three. I mean, and we saw this up and down on Saturday. It wasn't just, you know, in the game we're talking about, up and down the lineup. There were so many times that I saw that I'm like, folks, take the 3 points here. You're going to want these 3 points later. So completely agree with you. It's reaching epidemic levels.
And especially if I think this season's going to go the way that, like, I think we've got a real offensive line. You want to talk about epidemic? I don't know if there are enough good offensive linemen compared to how many defensive linemen there are. And I think defense could be back this year. And if you start getting these low-scoring games, it's like, man, sometimes not only do you wish you would have had the points, but it's like, look at the sidelines when they come up empty. You can just feel the entire thing deflate. It's like that matters. Well, like that impacts a team.
Well, you're right. And those formulas that they're all going off of are like based on the past. And so what if what you're saying is true, that this is a bit of more of a defensive-oriented year, or if it's a, you know, a defensive-oriented game? Like, you know, what happened in 2020 where you needed to score 50 points to win a game when there was no defense because they took the year off in the pandemic?
And literally didn't tackle anymore. Remember, like, they didn't even tackle at practice because they were worried about contact. Like, they were worried about, like, whatever, you know, what do we call it? Skin-to-skin contact. We were worried about that.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, at some point, you got to put the formulas on a shelf. And look, I'm a math guy. I kind of like numbers. But I also think you just can't be going for, I don't know.
To me, like, this is where, I think this is why you and I are onto something. In general, I think coaches used to not go for it enough. But it's like everything in America. It's like when there was a deficiency, we swing so far into the other direction. It's like, guys, it wasn't like every time you kicked it was bad. Like,
we're not playing.
It feels like most of these guys, it feels like now they're playing like Lane Kiffin on a video game where he just thinks like, all right, if I don't get it, I'll just restart it.
Yeah, and I hate these like fourth and three situations. I mean, I do think, you know, it didn't always work out for Texas. They had fourth and one, fourth and inches at times and couldn't move the chains. But I think there's a lot different when you're looking at fourth and 2 feet versus fourth and 4 yards. You know, I cringe in those scenarios when a coach has 3 points in the hand and he thinks, no, I'm going for fourth and four instead. That just, I don't know. I think they need to rethink that stuff a little bit.
I've decided it's like this. If you go for it and the other team is like saying, thank God they're going for it, you should have kicked.
Yeah.
And I felt like that's what we saw. Like all these teams, like Alabama was not happy to see Mike Norvell go for it on fourth and a, like you were saying, 2 or 3 feet. Fine, go for it. Like get the yard and your offensive line was dominating. But it's like if you're Florida State and you're like, all right, we're up and you see them going for it on fourth and 10, you're like, thank you. Like, all right, knock it down. Like, I don't know. It's just, I feel like we've just gone way too far. All right, before we let you go, I mean, it's a fascinating game that you're going to be covering. I know the emotion feels like, oh, it's a down week. I actually think there's some pretty fun games this week, which the Kansas-Missouri game I think is going to be fun. But, man, does tomorrow feel like a really big game for Brent Venables.
Huge. I mean, this is the contender-pretender game for Oklahoma. Based on what's left on that SEC schedule, I mean, sure, a loss would not mathematically eliminate them, but you'd never convince me that you're going to lose on your home field to Michigan and then rally to rebound against that SEC schedule and make the playoffs. So, I mean, this is a must-win game for Oklahoma. It's probably pretty close to that for Michigan, but especially for Oklahoma. They have to win this game, and not just for the playoff. Like, I mean, that's a brutal schedule. I think, sure, Oklahoma's expectation is always to make the playoff, but it's not just playoff. Like you can look at this schedule and start saying, like, if you lose games against good teams on your home field, this could get out of whack in a bad way. You know, these are the types of games, considering how many tough opponents are on Oklahoma's schedule. Like you need to win the home ones. You need to win the ones where you're favored, and they are favored in this one. But yeah, I mean, certainly for Oklahoma, and even to Michigan to a slightly lesser extent, I think this is certainly a contender pretender game. I probably like both defenses more than I like the offenses, especially with Bryce Underwood making his first road start as a true freshman, and then with Oklahoma. Yeah, they have a proven quarterback, but he's not proven against opponents of this caliber. So I trust the defenses more. I probably like Oklahoma because it's at home, but there's going to be, you're right to mention Venables. Like, I think Oklahoma fans have told themselves at this point, like, okay, bad season, but they reloaded. You know, he's calling the defense now. They got a new OC, new quarterback. It's going to be fine. That you can't tell yourself that anymore if you lose on your home field to what's probably a good, not great Michigan team.
Especially when the man that hired you is now retiring.
Absolutely. Yeah, the man that hired you is retiring. There's no protection there. I mean, the buyout's there, but with Oklahoma, they're not going to stand. This is year four, right? This is not DeBoer in year two, and he's facing heat in his own right, for sure. I don't know if he makes it through this season or not, but year four is a different ball game. He's already had two losing seasons in his first three. You don't stand for a third one in a four-year stretch at Oklahoma. So, yeah, for all the positivity that I thought Oklahoma was able to cook up in the preseason, a lot of it, I think, deservedly so. They didn't sit on their hands. They regrouped. But now it's prove-it time, or that whole narrative goes up in smoke, and Brent Venables is squarely back on the hot seat. I mean, I don't know that he ever got off, but to the extent that he did, he goes right back on it if he loses this game.
All right, safe travels. Hope you get to cover a great one.
Okay, thanks, Jeffrey.
That is Blake Topmeyer, senior national columnist for the USA Today Sports Network.
This fall, choose Primavera Online, and you'll be choosing a school with flexibility, personalized support, and an award-winning curriculum that's over 20 years strong. Now enrolling grades K-12 at ChoosePrimavera.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team. Rep your city. Rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.